Nerds, you're listening to an episode on the Nerdcore podcast feed. If you're feeling generous, please consider pledging to a tier on our Patreon at patreon.com/thenerdcore. We have tiers as low as $1 per month. Thanks so much, and enjoy the episode!
Welcome back to the Nerdcore Podcast, the podcast that reviews the movies and talks that nerd shit. This is episode 399! 399! Yeah. Did you know that for $3.99, you could afford a membership to the Patreon for $2? If you had $3.99.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But,
throwing that out there.
As always, this is the nerd you're going to hear the host of Sean Lynch, my wonderful co-host. Young Yoda.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the show. Patreon.com/nerdcore. For $3.99, you can get the $2 tier.
And you would just give us an extra $1.99.
I mean, out of the goodness of your heart.
Yep. How you doing, bro?
My back kind of hurts, but I'm good.
Yeah. You a changed man. How's that truck life suiting you?
Truck life good. Truck life good, bro. That shit's fun.
Tell me about the truck.
That shit, it's weird going from something that only had cruise control and air conditioning and power windows to something where I literally have shit ton of shit to press.
Yeah,
it's like my ADHD is going off. Like, oh, yeah, shit. Look at the back window. I can do this.
Yeah. What's it called? How lifted you got that shit? You got it.
It's just normal height.
Okay. Yeah, so you're not like those guys. So you're not like the guys with the chodes who like lift it all the way up.
No, I'm not.
You ready to go mudding? You about to take it outside, go mudding? You know, get mud all over it.
That's my father. That's not me, sir.
Yeah. So I see that you just wanted the truck for the work stuff that you had to do. And also to not break the window on your car again.
That was a very big deal, and I need all-wheel drive for my driveway, okay. Especially when it snows, like the 1 in 7 years at times it snows. So I just needed a truck. The box had kind of lost its utility.
Yeah.
It was good. I mean, I love the box, but at some point, I'm getting old, so I need something a little more comfort.
Okay. Well, look, man, I'm just glad that you treating yourself. You're getting something out here. You know, you're getting your truck. You know, truck life is treating you well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's gonna be. I think you're gonna blend more with the surroundings in Arizona now, because I'm sure there's a lot of trucks out there too.
Yeah, there's a shit ton of trucks, but my Tacoma's prettier.
Yeah, yeah. Tacoma's a nice truck. Honestly, Tacoma's a pretty nice truck.
Yeah. I like it.
Our good old Luis, he doesn't have a truck, but he has like a vanish, like it's a 4Runner.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's a nice truck.
There were some 4Runners on the lot that were really nice, but I wanted a truck, so.
Yep. Awesome. Well, today we're here to continue our month of Federico Fellini as we look at his 1960 film, La Dolce Vita. Yes, this one doesn't happen on Tuesday. Yep. But guess what? Somebody had to get a truck.
I was at a car dealership two days in a row for 2.5 hours each day.
Yeah. So Rad didn't have the chance to watch the film, nor did he have the chance to review. So we're doing it today, and we are moving our Minari review until next week for next Thursday. So and instead of this going up for Saturday, this is going to go up directly today. You know, it'll be available to you all. To the public
Sorry
today.
About that. I mean,
it happens. It honestly happens. We launched the movie club yesterday for Patreon, so that was really cool. You know, if you want to become a Patreon supporter at the $5 tier, you get the movie club, which is basically I assign a movie. Next month we'll be starting two movies, so I will assign one movie and the patrons will pick one movie. So we'll have two movies to watch during the month and discuss them together. for two separate episodes. So if you guys want to get in that, it's $5 at the patreon.com/thenerdcore. But yeah, today we're gonna talk about La Dolce Vita. So without further ado, I guess if there's nothing else to be said, anything, any update, Brad? You know, you watched this film, so you got a truck. You know, you didn't like magically, you know, grow an arm or something.
No, nothing like that. I put more debt into my life, but You know, at least this time it's fun debt. Yeah, it's not like just overwhelmingly sadness debt. Yeah. It's like debt I can like run around in.
Yeah. All right, let's go ahead and look at this. La Dolce Vita, pronounced, what's it called? La Dolce Vita. There is no English, what's it called, the translation for the film. They literally decided to keep the Italian title. I like it when they keep the original titles of these films. Cause like, yeah, who's gonna say The Sweet Life? Like,
no one. La Dolce Vita just sounds better. It's like Kurosawa's films. Like, Are you gonna call Ron something different?
Or no, it's Jimbo
something different? Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's more iconic that way.
Kagemusha, you know, come on. Yeah.
Like what the fuck are you gonna do with that?
Yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah. La Dolce Vita is a 1960 comedy drama film directed and co-written by Federico Fellini. The film follows Marcello Rubini, played by Marcello Mastroianni, a journalist writing for gossip magazines over 7 days and nights to his journey through the sweet life of Rome. The sweet life of Rome. In a fruitless search for love and happiness, the screenplay, co-written by Fellini and three other screenwriters, can be divided into a prologue, 7 major episodes interrupted by an intermission, and an epilogue, according to the most common interpretation. La Dolce Vita won the Palme d'Or, Golden Palm, at the 1960 Cannes Film Festival and the Oscar for Best Costumes. The film was a worldwide box office success and a critical success and is now frequently regarded as one of the greatest films in world cinema. This is the movie that when they interviewed Martin Scorsese said that Federico Fellini landed on the moon with La Dolce Vita, but next week's movie, he landed on Mars. And let me go ahead and read some other stuff here. Of course, produced by Guiso Piamato, Angelo Rizzoli. Dino Dall'Oretta is not in here yet, not in this one, which is weird. But what's it called? It also stars Anita Ekberg, Anouk Amelie, Yvonne Fournoux, Alain Cooney. I've got some fun facts about the cast, Brad. The music, of course, done by the incredible Nino Rota. Cinematography done by Otello Martelli. Edited by Leo Cattozzo. And, of course, it was... So, the original version of this film is 174 minutes. But, the version that we have is 180 minutes. So, it goes around... 3 hours. 3 hours long. What's it called? It's a 3-hour long film.
Yeah.
And of course, this was a box office success. It made $19.5 million in the United States. It had 13,617,148 admissions in Italy, and it had 2,956,094 admissions in France.
Wow.
This was a critic and a box office success for Federico. This also was a movie that was incredibly hated from the get-go by the Italian censorship board, and they wanted,
I bet.
Yep. And Brad, I think you know why, right?
The two gentlemen in the party at the end, I'm sure.
Specifically because there was something floating around that this film contained an orgy scene, which was not the case at all.
No.
This film was also partly inspired because of a rumor that there was like a orgy and it was happening in like the mountains in like fucking Italy and whatever, and like this thing that happened that it kind of influenced the last bit of the last episode in the film. So, well, not the last episode, the second to last episode, because the last episode is at the beach. But yeah, the second to last episode, which influenced that whole party scene.
Isn't that normal in Roman culture anyway?
No, I'm thinking it was just like, it was a whole rumor being brought up about, like, you know, Italian high life, and like they were having orgies like in the weekends and stuff. Like, I don't know how the Italians get down, but yeah.
I can believe it.
Yeah. Whether it was happening or not, you know, it doesn't mean that, what's it called? You have to, like, you know, censor
the movie. Yeah. I mean, but the censors go crazy.
Yeah. As I've described before, this was the movie that either was going to make or break Federico's career. If this movie did not do as well as it did,
it was about over.
Now, we would not be discussing Federico right now.
No.
Yeah, we would not be, because it was either this. Damn, those dogs. It was like, I mean, he agrees. They agree, right? You know, what's it called? Daisy agrees. Dixie agrees.
It would have been rough for him.
Rough. No pun intended. But it's true. You know, if it wasn't for this film, what's it called? It wouldn't have happened. The producer was dead set on Paul Newman playing Marcello.
That's why they call the dude Paul Newman.
But Federico was dead set on getting Marcello to play him. And guess what was the excuse, Brad? After watching this film, you're going to laugh at this. The studio said that they could not believe Marcello Mastroianni to be a man who would take on who would take women with him to bed at, like, to countless women to him with him to bed. He looked like too much of a goody two shoes. The man's got the swagger.
I gotta say something on this movie first, though. In 1960 Italy, apparently everyone is beautiful. Everyone in that fucking movie. Even goddamn Paparazzo. That is a good looking man.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was the thing. It was that they were like, no, Marcello, but they wanted Paul Newman so bad. And nope. He didn't end up casting Paul Newman. He went for Marcello Mastroianni.
I mean, I like Paul Newman. Don't get me wrong. I like Cool Hand Luke. I like his salad dressing. Like, I like Paul Newman. But you really need an Italian for this movie.
Yeah.
It's literally in Italy. What are you going to do, Paul Newman, doing, being the American running around?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Like, we've seen that.
Yep. And, of course, this is the film that deemed that created the term of paparazzi after our character, Paparazzo.
Which is a very interesting fact, because you wouldn't think that they just, did they not realize that was the name of the guy? Or were they like, didn't care? And they're like, oh, it's paparazzi. It's like, that's literally the name of the dude. Like, you literally just stole the name of the dude to call people who take photos of famous people paparazzi.
Yeah.
Kind of weird, but, you know, I guess that's how it goes.
And, of course, this was one of his many movies that he decided to shoot at the Cinecittà studio. But here's something that as you know, what's it called? Nice to be is one thing. But now, like, as you go forward with his career, there is something that a lot of people who know Federico and know and study the works know of this man. This man was a born liar. He would make up a different story every single day about different things that would go on, or how he got inspiration for this, how he got inspiration for that. There was a literal documentary called Federico Fellini, A Born Liar, that is out there, and it comes in the Fellini box set. You know, so what's it called? It's hard to really to know if he was saying the truth about Paul Newman, or, like, you know, if he was saying the truth about, like, where he got the inspiration for this film. But because there's one, what's it called? The inspiration being thrown at here, especially for the scene of the Madonna when she appears, when they say that she appeared, that he got that inspiration from a story in 1958 about two children seeing the Madonna. Mm. But, like, you know, knowing Federico and knowing how much of a liar the man was, I'm like, parts of me are like, dude, come on. Like, just say that you came up with this. Like, it's badass. Like, that scene is beautifully shot.
Yeah.
The rain, like, that was giving me, like, that reminded me of, like, Kurosawa and how he films Rain.
The opening of this movie with helicopter Jesus, my God. Like, I'm just watching that, like, I was looking at it, and I'm like, this is like a James Bond opening. This is something that they would do in Bond.
Yep. Yep. What's it called? Jesus being brought over from the helicopter, which was a real thing that went down in Italy. So let's go ahead and get into this. Jesus Christ, who turned on my freaking sound on my phone? Brad, go ahead and give me your thoughts on the Federico Fellini's La Dolce Vita.
I do have a question on this movie first, though, before I get into it, because it's going to affect my score in a way. When this was screened in theaters, did they have an intermission between each scene?
No.
Before it went into that scene?
No, it goes. It's seven episodes of the day of the week of what's it called this guy's life.
Which this dude lives a freaking crazy fucking life.
The intermission scene, I guess, is the scene where you could have just got up and left, because if you look at that scene, like, it doesn't really carry much weight throughout the movie. Like,
yeah, I was.
It's just him once again reminding himself that he, as much as he would want to love this woman, there's no way that he's gonna love this woman, you know?
Yeah.
I will say that scene to this day, Brad, I don't know what that light is in the back.
Yeah, that's a big fucking light.
I don't know, but my professor was like, my professor, when he showed me this film, he was like, no, I don't know what that light is for. Some people say it's the interpretation of the eyes of God looking down on them. But, like, I don't know. Like, why did he leave that light there?
My only guess on what that can be is an old kind of construction light rig for nighttime construction. But it's way too fucking big. Like, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
But
there was intermission there, like, for that type of stuff. I mean, you're kind of it's an episodic film where it's looking at seven different instances in the life of this guy.
I mean, I actually like the intermission scene. I thought that was kind of
very
well acted. The anger finally boiling over on both of them.
I think that's truly the turning point for him, where he starts to really become like the people that he's been around.
The partier it really makes the ending of this movie quite sad, just how he ends up, because he's not going to find fulfillment in that. And you can already tell he's literally just throwing feathers at a woman, and making her a chicken.
Inciting an orgy that's not going to happen, even though the one guy in the back took off his shirt and he was like, I mean, I'm ready. You guys ready?
See, and my only gripe with this movie, and I don't even know if I can really call it great, because it's beautifully shot, and I really do enjoy the black and white of the movie, but because it's black and white, sometimes when those scenes change, it's hard to tell that they changed in some parts. That's my only gripe with it, is because you would have a scene and he's doing something, and then it would go into the other scene, but since it's black and white, you don't really have a change in, like, scenery, because he walks off screen in the one, and he walks on screen in the other. You just think it's part of the same scene, but it's actually moved into a different day.
Yeah.
I guess this is 7 days. I thought this was, like, way over a longer time span.
It's like 7 days, but I don't know if they're, like, in the same, like, time frame, right? Different days of his life.
Okay, that would make sense, because I'm watching this movie and I read 7 days and I'm like, this is a week for this dude? I would be dead. No. I would literally just be dead.
No, because then that doesn't explain how he looks older at the end.
Well, I mean, if you go on full rager mode, maybe. But yeah, he looks way older and just way tired at the end of this movie.
Yeah.
I mean, other than that little thing, I don't have a gripe with this movie. I will say Anita Ekberg was, she when she was on the screen,
Belladonna.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the main character Marcello, I thought it was a great story to be told, because it's showing you a man who already has a woman who loves him at home. But he wants to be a part of this society where just everything's kind of free and do what you want. And at the end, he kind of goes with that. And I guess the fish is a metaphor in a way of
like a fish out of water.
Yeah, and it's kind of like the dead rotting corpse that he's kind of turning into. And then he's waving goodbye to the previous life.
Yeah, it's a little girl.
Yeah.
So my second time watching this film, I'll go ahead and say this right now. When I first watched this film, this was my favorite from him. I think that this is still really good. I think it's truly really good. I don't think this is my favorite from him though. Now once again, I haven't watched it a second time, but I cannot be remiss to not discuss how incredible of a first time performance with Federico. This, like, you watch this with Marcello being the first time he works for Federico, you understand why he wants to continue working with him after this. Like,
yeah, he's quite amazing in his roles.
He's got the stature, the swagger, the body language. Like, when I read that, like, he looks like too much of a goody. Like, huh?
No, you can look at this guy and believe that he is a playboy. That's really what the point of this movie is, him becoming part of that playboy life, even though he probably doesn't belong there.
Yeah. There's just so much, like, my favorite episode, of course, much like everybody's, is the episode with Anita Ekberg. With what's it called?
You think?
Yeah, pretty much it is the enchantress, you know, the goddess making her way to Rome and what's it called? Capturing the attention of everybody. And she is someone that Marcello desperately wants. Like, this is the most beautiful woman, the most highest society of woman he's ever met. She is literally the enchantress priestess that she's been waiting for, and he can't have her.
Because Tarzan.
Mm-hmm. He can't have her. And in that, my favorite, just when the water's running and she's just feeling it, and he wants to touch her, but he can't touch her.
And then the water stops, and it goes from nighttime to daytime.
Mm-hmm.
There's fun scenes in this.
Fun fact, Marcello was plaster drunk during that scene on vodka, because that water was so cold for him, he couldn't stand being in that water. So he had to drink a lot of vodka to be able to be in that water, while Anita Ekberg was stone sober and she was going in and out of that water like it was nothing.
Oh, did you see Anita Ekberg? That girl had, you know, some good bodily curves.
Beautiful. I mean, yes. You cannot pick a better person to represent this priestess, like this object of desire that is absolutely unattainable.
Well, and just when she's on screen, your eyes are just directed right at her.
Everybody, like, that interview, like, just simple things, like when they ask her, like, what are your three favorite things about life? And she goes, love, love, and love. And people are just, like, in awe of her. And just how the minute she steps out of that plane, like, everybody is there to greet her and wants to see her. That even she'll, like, you know, give them a second run so that way they can get good photos of her. It's, like, she is this, like, incredible symbol of, like, beauty and high life that not everybody's going to be able to obtain. But you realize towards the end of that episode, she's treated just like many women by their men. Like,
abuse.
Even the highest life is not without sin.
Yeah.
The music by Nino Rota is beautiful. I mean, that's nothing new. I mean, Rota's scores get better and better after these, but, like, the cinematography, whew, can't wait.
Just some amazing scenes all throughout there. Even the one where the car ones where they're running each other off the road, like that's a fucking just amazing.
Yeah, that cinescope, dude. It's that beauty of cinescope, like that very wide screen. Aspect ratio to it is giving you a lot of room. It's just, it really allows a lot to be captured, and you really get the feel of this movie.
Well, and this movie is just not like empty tropes of, you know, the high life and just, you know, them existing and being just, you know, rich and happy. Like, I really like the moments where it brings it back down to earth on what this kind of life causes. Specifically his friend killing himself and his two children.
Yeah, that one there. So that one is one of my most heartbreaking, but the other one that's pretty heartbreaking is when he's with his father. First of all, shout out to Marcello for taking the long way back to the apartment to give his dad time to fuck, you know. That's basically what it was, even though he wasn't happy about that. Like, he was still like, they're like, why'd you take the long way, Marcelo? Well, I had to get my dad, I had to let my dad get his nut in, you know?
Yeah.
But after that, you know, he basically just, like you said, he never knew his father. Like, he's going down the route of his father, basically. You know?
Yeah, playboy. Play
mm-hmm. Who doesn't have time for his children, who's not present in their lives. And then he's just basically practically begging him to, like, stay with him so they could, like, spend time together and get to know each other. And it's like, yeah, even all that begging, the man still decides to leave.
I mean, but I really did enjoy that party scene with the French cabaret. Mm-hmm. I thought that was really well done.
Yeah.
This whole movie was very well shot and very well framed.
It's in costumes, like,
dialogue was point on point.
Yeah.
There's nothing really I can find fault at this movie, except I don't know if I liked it as much as at a previous watch. I liked it.
No. I can tell you right now off the bat, this is not getting the score that I gave what's it called? Gave Cabiria.
I just feel like if the I feel like it's more because it was in black and white. And it's just the transitions are harder to tell in this, because the one I always bring up is for time jumps is Tarantino. Mm-hmm. And you can tell when he transitions, mostly because those scenes are at different places in a way and just look different, like far different from the previous one. So you can tell that was a transition. And these, not so much. There's some parts where it's just like, that could have been the same scene.
Mm-hmm. Yep. But, God, this movie is just, first of all, like, yeah, you feel it that it's a long movie. I mean, it's a fucking long movie.
Well, I had because I got home so from the dealership the one day and I watched 1.5 hours of it. Mm-hmm. I was like, I gotta go to bed. And then the next day I watched the rest of it. It's just like, I had to split it up just because this is a long movie.
Yeah. But, you know, it's just so like, but to me, like, this film basically, it's bare bones. I'm telling you, it's the life of a man who just wants to be happy, but he's looking for happiness in the wrong place.
Exactly. But for the time thing, I got to say this. There's movies that – there's a lot of three-hour movies, and we've reviewed a few of them. I believe this movie had to be 3 hours long.
Oh, yeah.
To tell this story, just because it's showing him going down a route – that he's not going to be able to come back from. I think that was neat. It's not like we're like Seven Samurai, where I'm like, yeah, Kurosawa probably could have cut 20 minutes from that, but who the fuck am I? You know, it's not one of those where I could find fault in the amount of time it spent. Like, it needed that amount of time.
Yeah. Yep. And God, but like, you brought up the guy who, like, it's called a kill them. Like, I'm telling you, like, in a lot of this film, Marcelo's being given different versions of who he's possibly going to become if he keeps going down this path. He like, you'll probably become your friend who killed himself and killed his kids, or you'll probably become this unhappy man who, what's it called, who really has nothing else going for him but, like, the riches that he sees, and it's like, it's not enough to make you happy.
Well, and it's like at the castle, I think you're talking about that guy. Who doesn't seem very happy. He seems very stressed than the fact that he has to keep his father's wealth going. And whereas the person he's marrying has to be the most funny person ever, the one with the helmet on. And she's like, hey, I found your forefathers. And it's just like, that's fucking hilarious. Like, yeah. And he doesn't even fucking chuckle at it. It's just like, this dude is just way stressed.
Yeah. It's just, it's really, like, there's so much there, but I do want to bring this up, what's it called, I forgot to bring it up on the last one, but my professor Alessandro Carrera wrote this book, and there's a really interesting chapter about La Dolce Vita in here. Did not get the chance to read it, but I read a little bit from my 8.5 essay, which is the film we're watching next week. So I'll be discussing a lot of the stuff that he discussed about 8.5 in the next episode. Mm-hmm. So, but basically, you know, the whole premise of this, what's it called, for his discussion on Dolce Vita on his book is basically like that. This film is like a constant reminder that, like, no life is without some sort of flaw. Like, as rich as you get, there is still something ugly in there, And there's something there that's like not right.
And you know, we always hear money doesn't make you happy. I mean, I think we all would much rather have a lot of money than not have a lot of money, but it's not going to give you happiness.
No. And this, like, and you see it, you know, and it's like, you see this like incredible journey of Marcello just going deeper and deeper into the rabbit hole and just becoming more and more corrupted. Because like I said, the breaking point to me is when he finally like just lets it go, even though he picks up his fiance, I'm sure that his relationship with his fiance is never
it's the same. Done. It's gone. And that was basically him throwing away that life that he could have had with her and choosing to go this different route of excess.
Yeah. He just wants to live this, like, what's it called, life of excess and being a public figure. And it's, you know,
apparently making women into chickens.
Yep. Yep. Well, what's it called, getting in there on their backs.
In final shot where they're announcing and just having them leave and he's just throwing the feathers. That was beautiful.
With the lighting.
I'm like, they did this with fucking feathers?
Yeah.
This is amazing.
Yeah. I love the whole like striptease, what's it called, that they're doing. It's like, the other one's like, no, you're not going to do it. You're not going to go all the way. It's like, you know, you're too much for chicken shit, basically. And they're like, no, like she goes all the way. And what's it called? You know, the other guy gets home to the house and he just doesn't care at all. And he's like, get out of my fucking house. Like, I don't care.
He's like, I got to leave tomorrow for work. Get the fuck out.
It's like, I'm not like you guys who are like full of life and everything.
And then he's like, who broke the window, you jackasses?
Yep. But there, what's it called? Of course, there's the, I wanted to bring up the fact that one of his most famous, what's it called, type of like camera movements that he always does in his movies is introduced towards the end. It was that the side shot, what's it called, as they're walking through the through the woods to go to the beach. Mm-hmm. And it's like that's kind of side like that. And it's like,
that's so good. It's yeah. So good.
There's also another one that you see throughout the film, at one point in the film where it's like, it's like a, what's it called, a pullback, and it's kind of showing more and more of the area, but it's not like it's pulling the camera back. It's more so if it's literally moving with the camera. Mm-hmm. So it's like, it's this really interesting kind of pullback, whereas it looks like if the character's walking back into something. So it's really interesting. But yeah, I love this movie. I truly love this movie. I think that this rightfully is what is as successful as it needs to be. It there's a reason this movie was as successful. Like, you know,
I mean, and I'm sure in 1960, this was basically like unheard of.
Yeah,
in like, a lot of ways, he was doing a lot of stuff that, you know, the greats from then on would basically steal from him.
Yeah, well, you're gonna see a scene in the next movie that Tarantino straight up stole for Pulp Fiction.
I can see that.
But I don't put it past you.
I don't put it past him. And this is what I got to say about Tarantino is, yes, Tarantino steals. He steals parts of movies and scenes and shots and all that. But then he makes it his own. So I got to call him a director for that.
Yeah.
Like, the man knows what's good in other movies, and he takes that and makes his own shit.
Yep. But, yeah, that final shot is one of my favorites. Like, just loving how, like, the girl calling out to him, like, I can't hear you. It's like, yeah, you're way disconnected from this life anyway. As much as you would like to hear, you can't hear her.
Yeah, you're gone.
You're gone. You're gone.
I will say my favorite scene, though, was the Anita Ekberg dancing scene, because that was quite lovely.
Yeah, waiting for something to pop out. Yeah. Like, and then, you know, like, the guy who comes in and kind of disrupts the whole party, like,
yeah, he's like, doing handstands. He's got like the Greek beard. I'm like, this is the weirdest motherfucker looking. But yeah, party on, bro.
Yep. Oh man, but
it's the weasel.
Weasel. Yeah. Oh god, I love this movie. I really do. Like, you know, it's not a drag. It's just it's long, and you feel the weight. But you need it to be this long.
I find you needed to be this long. Like, yeah. And you know me, I'm usually like, why the fuck did this have to be 3 hours? Yep. Like, why?
Yeah. But, I mean, this needs to be this long. And also just, you know, I agree with you. Like, what's it called? If I didn't know that this was an episodic structured film, if I watched this, it wouldn't feel like an episodically structured film. So I wouldn't be able to like think about it in the way that I'm thinking about it right now.
Yeah.
Because everything kind of blends in. And I really
think that's due for it being black and white. But that's really, I think if it was in a color version, actually it was in a color version, it probably wouldn't have been as great.
Nah.
You would have been able to tell the different changes.
Yep. So let's go ahead and move on to the score, Brad. What are you going to give Federico Fellini's La Dolce Vita?
Well, we gave the last one a 10, right?
Yep.
And I particularly like that one more. And this one did have only the issue for me was the just being able to tell when a scene change happened in some instances, which I don't know if I can give that much off for because it doesn't. I mean, once you know it's an episodic structure, you kind of go with the film. Everything else is just quite beautiful. So I give it 9.5.
Yep, we're both on the same boat. I'm going to go ahead and give La Dolce Vita a 9.5 out of 10. I understand. This is truly masterful work. I mean, it's Fellini. You know, like, yeah, not a lot of us want to watch a 3-hour film of the bourgeoisie pricks of high life society, basically living with the most privilege out of everybody. But
I mean, I definitely don't want to see back in the day like Paris Hilton, Lindsay Lohan going out and doing this shit. That would bore me to death. But this is kind of different level of just overall excess and beauty on film.
Yeah, it just looks incredible. And it's just the story that you get here about just like nowhere in this film do I ever feel like it's kind of glorifying or making it look like this is something you want to live. It's like, no, this is like
with
all these things that Marcello's still very unhappy.
Well, and that's why I think you see a lot of famous people when they grow up, they get out of the public eye as quick as they can.
Yeah. We thank you for your opinions too, Dixie. It means a lot to get your thoughts.
You liked it.
You really
like it. Liked it.
Yep. All right. Well, next week we will go ahead and watch his 1963 film 8.5, which is another one, my friends, that I'm not gonna lie, when I first watched 8.5, I was like, I don't know what the fuck I just watched, but I loved it. I was like, this is wow. This next one, Federico Fellini was on the verge of not knowing what his next movie was going to be. He had to go to a psychoanalyst because he fell into a depression because he did not know where his career was going next. He didn't know. He didn't know at all. Like, he did like literally the man was stuck. He didn't know. It was until the day that it was due, the script was due to be done, he had his idea to be, the movie was shot. The day that production was going to start, he had his idea. He had a script, but he had his idea finally formed about what he wanted to do with it. So that will be 8.5 as we look at that next week. But for now, as always, I want to thank you all for coming in and chatting with us. Nobody chatted out with us. But I want to thank you all. It's all good. I want to thank you all for listening. And as always, I want to make sure that you all, stay safe out there. I want to thank the wonderful Patreon supporters for helping us here and making everything.
Didn't we get a new Patreon that we should shout out?
Yeah. Thank you so much to Rachel Sweetland for joining the Patreon at the $5 tier. They are a movie club member. So thank you so much, Rachel. You can go follow Rachel at Peach Batch. PEACHBETCH on Twitter, and Rachel SROX on Letterboxd. So thank you so much, Rachel, for becoming a patron. We want to thank our Patreon supporters, everybody. You all make this show happen and make a lot of these shows happen. As always, remember, we want to thank our wonderful producers, our writers, and our showrunners. Okay, our wonderful associate producers, Cassie and Sarah, thank you so much. Our executive producer, Shane.
You can follow our friend Shane at twitch.tv/XSRK or on Twitter at XSRK_. Thank you, sir. Truly love you, Shane.
Truly love you, bro. And our writers, BrownRice96 on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, Twitch, everywhere. Go and find them. And our wonderful Tony.
Hey, Tony!
At Real Nerdy Dad on Twitter. And remember, guys, tomorrow there will be no Nerdcore live show. Instead, it is the farewell episode of the Nerdy Chicano Show. We'll be live at 8:30 p.m. talking whatever the hell we want to talk about. And Brad will be there.
I'll try to be there. I don't know yet, but I will try.
The hell's it with this week, man?
I don't know.
Fuck if I know. But I hope you all have a good day, and go watch this film. It's going to be hard for you to find it, but go watch this film. There is a Criterion release, and then there's a new restoration for the Fellini box set. But if the one that we have is the old restoration, Jesus Christ, it's so beautiful.
Oh, before we go off, how'd you like the Coker trilogy box?
Hell yeah, I've got it over here. My thing, I loved it. Loved it. Thanks, Brad, for the Coker trilogy. Yeah, it's beautiful. Like the way that it's organized, like it has like three separate pamphlets, but they all merge to create the what's it called? Painting.
Wow.
The cover of it. It's like separate parts of a painting, and they all come together to kind of form this square painting.
That's really cool.
Actually. Yeah, can't wait to sit down and watch the Coker trilogy. But thanks, man. It means a lot. As always, I want to thank you all so much, and I'll see you guys on the next one tomorrow for the Nerd Chicano Show live. And without further ado, Brad, send them out.
All right, Ro. Thank you for being host as always. Thank you to all our listeners out there, all our Patreon supporters. We appreciate each and every one of you. Thank you to all those who join us on Twitch, anywhere else on social media, really. So thank you guys. I guess to end this, I will just say... racks on racks on racks on racks. Young Yoda out.